Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. What is money? Money, printed paper or a stock certificate, often translates to nothing but confidence in the issuer, be that a government, corporate management, or a bank. In essence, it's a paper promise. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Paper Promise, written September 2004. The banking system, or any paper monetary system, is built on confidence. Confidence that a note will be paid out in something solid, something other than a paper promise, which is what all money systems and banknotes are. Centuries past, when the world was operating primarily on the barter system, such promises were few and were backed by gold or silver or land or a herd of horses or cows, something solid. Villages and towns, farmers and those in the trades, all operated primarily by barter, a cabinet built by a carpenter and payment in a quarter of a slaughtered hog, a bushel of apples getting a tooth pulled by a dentist. Financial sophistication developed slowly, based on the growing confidence that the backer of a money system, a paper promise, could be counted upon to deliver something solid. Thus it was until recently that gold was considered the backing. When the press to use paper money to support a debtor economy ran beyond the supply of gold, the money systems were taken off the gold standard. In the past, a creditor could put his house and property up for backing for a loan, his herd, perhaps even his pending harvest of wheat, but could not get credit unless he had something solid as collateral. But today it's the norm for every person, without substance to his name, to have access to credit cards that allow him to go into debt beyond his ability to repay. The creditor is given credit on the assumption that he will repay. The funds he has loaned are assumed to have worth. And all pass paper promises around as though they were based on things that could be brought forth upon demand. As can be seen when whole countries default on the paper money that they float out under their flag. The value of a dollar can collapse quickly. Argentina is a case in point, the money becoming worthless almost overnight. In days past, when banks and paper money were closely tied to things, such a panic would result in the banks who had loaned money to farmers demanding payment in things, and any who deposited savings in the bank demanding payment in things, so that at the end of the shuffle, those having made savings deposits would find themselves with a herd of cattle or some acreage rather than paper money. When money became unhinged from solid backing, speculation crept in, resulting in inflated stocks, loans without collateral, a pyramid scheme that is a house of cards that would collapse with few left after the shuffle with anything solid in their hands. Most would be left holding worthless notes, uncollectible, standing atop a pile of bankruptcies. During the Great Depression, it was no secret that banks were in default, farmers and corporations bankrupt, but this was ignored as demanding payment that could not be produced would only put properties and empty buildings in the hands of banks who could not sell them as the market itself was dead. So a bankrupt status was ignored, and all floated along until life came back into the system and payment began to be made again, extension after extension made. This is what is occurring today among countries and creditors and banking entities to avoid breach of confidence that would start a panic in the world at large. Say nothing, make no demands for payment in things, give extension after extension, and the house of cards built on paper promises stands. This assumes cooperation among all parties, and where this is holding today, as it did during the Great Depression, there is a difference. During the Great Depression, the world was not beset with natural disaster after natural disaster, as is starting to occur today. Commerce, trade was reduced due to lack of confidence, but at the base, the economies were solid and recovery followed renewed confidence. Today, all countries are in a crisis affecting their base economies. We mentioned that crop failure would follow the irregular weather, and it did. But buildings collapsed in earthquakes, trains running off suddenly twisted tracks, factories exploding as gas lines breach, and storms tearing at coastlines without remorse do more than represent an opportunity to rebuild. They represent insurance companies unable to pay for rebuilding, factories laying off workers or unable to function, and distribution of goods blocked. In other words, paralysis, rather than a fever of economic activity, results. When those at the top of the financial pile, or those whom they command, see the structure starting to become a pile of bankruptcies likely to tie up their ability to reach down and grab a thing, so they will not be left with worthless paper promises, all want to move first in order to get a thing before the other financial giants beat them to it. They are holding notes, and at the base these notes translate to land, buildings, inventories, oil deposits, ships, food stocks, herds, and virtual slavery of those who cannot pay but need to eat and have shelter. Indentured servitude returned. We have mentioned that the pending pole shift has resulted in leveling wars between the puppet masters and their restless puppets, seeking to become opportunists during times when their masters might be unable to retain control. These wars will result in the pact of cooperation between creditor countries and corporations and those who own them cracking. Fail to cooperate and I'll call your notes due, and when you struggle under the rain of failures, I will pluck what I wish from the pool and emerge owning you once again, but with you wasted and discredited. That's the threat. Thus, where banks default because those they have loaned money to are going into bankruptcies, and where at the base this is due to collapsing economies, struggling with the effect of the current earth changes, natural disasters, there is also the element of warfare among the puppet masters and their puppets. To the extent that the rebellious puppets are the political power in a country, that country may find itself fiscally undermined, and corruption within that power structure exposed. To the extent that the rebellious puppets are corporate heads, these corporate heads will find themselves unable to get the loans they need to continue, and forced into bankruptcy court. To the extent that a puppet master, and there are many, sense that the enemy is another puppet master, the property holdings of that master will be undermined, whether this includes a country, a corporation, or financial holdings such as bonds. Watch closely during this war of the titans in the financial realm, and you will see the swords flash and parry. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Seeking wealth that will not disappear during a dollar devaluation or a dropping stock market, people seek things that will hold their value. But these, too, are ephemeral. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Precious Possessions, written August 1996. During stable times, civilization built on the past, the past dragged forward as welcome or unwelcome baggage. The past is intrusive, something the young and old are constantly reminded of, and serves as models for the young, rules to be guided by, and social norms for the newborn to adapt to. During tumultuous times, the grip that the past has on society is broken, and priorities are reassessed. What are termed great works of art by humans are considered valuable only because they came from the past and carry a long list of credits. Each new admirer is thus bolstered, and each potential critic is thus intimidated. Even frankly ugly works are thus floated forward, gaining in price. Possessions such as houses or land carry value as they are assumed to be permanent, the house standing until deliberately torn down, and the land maintaining its view or agricultural productivity on into the future. After the coming pole shift, surviving humans will be starving, broken, frightened, and will find that the price of a meal is nothing so worthless as a painting or statue from the past. A sharp knife, a sewing needle and thread, some seeds, these things will become the precious possessions. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Does money buy love, security, good health, and a long life? Freedom from boredom and the wherewithal to be entertained? To a great extent, it does. May not buy love, but it can buy sex and physical attentions and the facade of love. It buys security from the standpoint of walls and guards in a well-stocked enclave, but it will not protect them from the forces of nature or disloyal servants and guards. It can buy medical care, thus a longer life, but modern medicine cannot cure all ills. It certainly buys entertainment and travel, toys galore. Beyond love, security, health, and entertainment, money also gives one stature and respect. Or so goes the hope of those who cannot secure status any other way. Thus some cons masquerade as wealthy, or take on the vestiges of wealth. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Status Symbols, written October 1995. Human societies rift with status symbols. Big cars, big houses, titles after the name, designer clothing, the right neighborhood, membership in elite groups, and name recognition. For many, the status symbol looms more important than any underlying meaning, because the status symbol represents power. Those with money have more power than those without, almost invariably, as money can buy cooperation. Thus, most status symbols denote money. Where it's difficult to put on the facade of big money without the actual prop, those masquerading as well-to-do manage to do so surprisingly well on occasion by dressing well, acting arrogant, and getting others to foot the bill. Those with membership in elite, exclusive groups have more power than those without, as the membership cooperates with each other, doing favors, and thus each member has a larger reach. Thus those with such membership almost invariably advertise them in any introduction or brief biography they provide. Rarely are those without actual membership able to assume this facade. This is not due to any difficulty in making up counterfeit certificates or cards, but due to the clubby way members communicate with each other. Phone calls on a first-name basis, and introductions from someone known before a stranger is allowed into the midst. This ploy, claiming membership one does not possess, is not tried often, as it is invariably counterproductive. Those with name recognition have more power than those without, as others are afraid of offending them for fear of the incident becoming widely known. Thus hotel accommodations or fast and often free service is provided, as everyone suspects the cameras may be running in some manner. Scams where the power-hungry assume the name of someone well-known are usually short-running, though all humans can have look-alikes, and some of the famous have many. A certain dress, a little makeup, practice the voice and posture, and voila, one can walk about and pick up the perks at a party or convention. The counterfeit personage, emboldened by success, tends to use this routine more and more often and linger, thus eventually getting caught and dealing with a lot of disgust and venom thrown their way, outweighing any benefits gained. However, the easiest status symbol to attain, and the one most often used by the power-hungry, is a title after the name: doctor, judge, CPA, representative, director, manager, esquire, president, captain, general. How often are the titles verified as genuine? Almost never, unless the personage is applying for a job, and even then this type of checking is seldom done if the personage has the proper demeanor. Thus the power-hungry can assume a title and get away with it in the main, winning deference and rapt attention at a minimum, entry where the doors were formally locked, an audience where the message was formally dismissed, and as any good salesman knows, getting the foot in the door is half the battle. They are home. Thus, when one finds status symbols in the form of titles after a stranger's name, particularly nebulous titles, one should not instantly assume they are dealing with a person who has earned the title, or any title, for that matter. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. Because human society almost invariably bows to wealth, the lure of get-rich-quick schemes, like the lottery, is irresistible. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Get Rich Quick, written January 1996. Money may not buy love, but it certainly covers a lot of fronts. Good nutrition, housing, the ability to travel, hand servants, sexual gratification, life in a good climate, and a good view from the top of a hill. More significantly, money is a way out, out of having to work, having to do chores that hirelings can do, out of having to be polite to employers and bankers, and the possibility of a way out of any troubles with a quick cash settlement. Money can also allow the vision to be attained and make the difference between embarking on a visionary path or languishing. It's not surprising, then, that get-rich-quick schemes are popular and make a lot of money for the promoters, who are themselves trying to get rich. In dealing with these assertions, that the secret is this or that, one should bear in mind that if it were all that easy, then everyone would be rich. Is this a closely held secret when it's for sale? Is anything being revealed that is of special knowledge? These schemes generally include a lot of self-confidence builders, which in and of themselves are calculated to make a difference in the lives of those who buy the package scheme. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. For the vast majority of mankind, on the bottom looking up, and longing in most cases for better circumstances, the coming pole shift will bring a change to most. It will put us off the money system, in that the paper promise will be defunct, and the populace no longer has any confidence in printed paper or stocks and bonds. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Worthless Money, written July 1995. Money will begin to lose its value long before the cataclysms. This will be worldwide and in almost all human cultures. Why should this be the case when, as we have stated, the majority of humanity will be either unaware of the coming cataclysms or in denial? The financial structure of the world's financial empires is really quite fragile. Look to the swings of the stock markets, the bond markets, and other speculations. Panic sets in at a moment's notice. The problem is that financial matters are based on human perceptions of wealth. This moves about even in the most stable of times. The value of an item increases during shortage, plummets during times of plenty, and otherwise is affected by various perceptions of being in the right place at the right time. There are gamblers aplenty in the financial arenas. Look to history to see how little it took to create financial panics. With all the dire predictions being made, true or untrue, many people worldwide will be on edge. Add to this the increasing crop failures, with consequent food shortages, affecting the markets and commodities. Humans of good heart concerned with survival through the cataclysms are advised not to look to the money market for assistance. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. For the Zetas, the barter system will prevail, going into the pole shift and certainly afterwards. And skills will replace the paper promise. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Barter System, written December 2001. We predict that long before the shift, a barter system will be replacing the current paper money system. The value of the dollar in all countries will be falling, such that in any transaction, one or both parties will feel they are getting a fair deal only if a thing, not a representation, is given or received. This is a common practice in countries where the dollar is falling, and a natural migration as the thought occurs readily to mankind, the barter system being recent in their cultural evolution. What will this mean for the common man, and what will it mean for the rich? The common man will find they are pleased with themselves if they have had the foresight to secure goods of value, such as seeds or tools or dried food. The value of appliances that are dead and not able to run, even of cars unable to run over broken roads, will be zero. The value of items that can increase worth, such as a needle and thread which can repair clothing otherwise worthless, or a shovel that can create a garden, otherwise a weed patch, will balloon. The rich will of course whine endlessly and try to convince anyone who will listen that their goods will remain in value, which it will not. Monies will be used as a medium of exchange, as will jewels and art, in some settings, for a brief period of time. These will occur until those being offered these at bargain prices realize the shift has happened worldwide, and rescue and return to civilization as they knew it will not occur. Perhaps months, but more likely weeks, and only in limited settings. We advise the common man, as we have in the past, to relieve themselves of stock and jewels and paper money that will fall in value, perhaps suddenly and without warning. Better to stock up on things that will have value, candles and matches, school books and a guitar, than what the rich treasure. In that one's skill can be considered a bartering item, one should examine their own skill set in the following exam. If you were in the middle of a wilderness, alone, what steps would you take to survive? What's the first skill that you would need and not have? Whom do you know that you would wish about you in such circumstances? What is that skill that they possess that you perhaps could develop? Imagine a group in such a setting, having arrived at a land dump where various pieces of junk are about and could provide mechanical devices or shelter if utilized creatively and resourcefully. How would you go about creating a comfortable home for yourself and others in such a situation? If you are clueless on how to use junk to structure a home, recycle and hook up, then perhaps you should work with a junk man in his yard and take lessons. What we are telling you is that you should mentally put yourself in this setting, and you will have no difficulty determining what is useless or most worthwhile in a skill set. If you are an accountant and cannot translate this skill into becoming a tailor or herdsman or cook, your skill is useless. End of the quote from Zetaton. What will this do to those used to having status, being on top of the pile, because they had money? This is not a simple arrangement, because the wealthy class has layers, all looking up at those with more control over society and down at those beneath them, and all quite used to their status. There's going to be a lot of screaming and yelling, especially among those who care more about their status and money than they do about their fellow man. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Clash of Agendas, written November 2003. As the Earth changes, leading up to the inevitable passage of Planet X, with cataclysmic effect on Earth increases, pressure by all to promote their agendas increases, leading to a clash of agendas. When times are comfortable, the pace can be slow, without pain or anxiety, but when time seems short, or when all seems to be crashing and about to be lost, agendas are pushed aggressively. What are these agendas, and in what way do they clash? Since those in the service to others work cooperatively, and do so increasingly in emergency situations, we will address primarily the agendas of those in the service to self, as affected by increasing earth changes and awareness of the big lie by the general public. Puppet masters. He with the gold rules. The public assumes a broad ownership of corporations and media outlets when the opposite is true. A very few individuals control the wealth of the world, install politicians to their pleasure, and create or destroy the fortunes of countries as well as individuals in the chess game they play with their control, and thus operate as puppet masters during the cover-up. Their agenda is to retain control, retain their position, and thus, as their gold rules, they want minimal impact to their financial stature. No bank failure, no drop in stock value, no corporate bankruptcies, and as they assume this would occur if knowledge of a rogue planet in their inner solar system were to be broad, they consider hiding this as long as possible of prime importance. The puppets, promised wealth, power, security, and opportunities outside of what their natural talents would afford them, puppets invariably allow their strings to be pulled. They are chosen because they can be controlled by blackmail, by bribery, by intimidation, and if disappointed with the role they are assigned, they are alternatively threatened and placated by their puppet masters, else eliminated. Puppets run amok of their masters when they sense their world will not continue and make demands. Occasional restless puppets are expected, with alternatives waiting in the wings, but when puppets panic en masse, malfunction, are absent, and many replacements are happening simultaneously, the chess game the puppet masters play does not go as planned. The comfortable class. Accustomed to being secure due to ownership of goods and the power this brings, the upper class or moneyed class will react with more than shock when their property, whether corporate interest or stocks and bonds or real property, is flushed down the toilet during the increasing changes pummeling the earth. Insurance companies will go under when their insured base surpasses their wealth. Corporate bankruptcy will ensue when all but the corporate name have been washed or blown away, and clutching jewels and artwork, they will stand and wail. Banking empires, government security blankets, all run by puppets of the puppet master, will receive demands to do something to return the comfortable class to their comfort. Simultaneous demands on nervous and malfunctioning puppets creates an explosive situation. More malfunction, wailing all around. And the working class. At the base of the pyramid, the working man and woman observe the drama. From their standpoint, they are living in the land of Oz, where nothing is as it has been pronounced. The good guys doing bad deeds, the economic recovery putting them out of their homes and jobs, and no one explaining why the sun and the moon and the seasons are not where they are supposed to be. The point of working for the comfortable class is for food and a roof over one's head, and when both seem tenuous, loyalty fails. The working class is thus simply not where expected to be, not the drones or robots anticipated, and the comfortable class now switches from simply wailing to panic. Insecurity translates to autocracy, so strong-arm tactics against the working class are the first armament. This, of course, backfires when cities are collapsing and the leadership proven inept, so the working class becomes the rebelling class, and is absent even more. Thus, the clash of agendas means that none of the social structure operates as expected by those in the service to self, who find their banking empires collapsed, their real and corporate properties vanishing, their puppets wandering around confused, and the comfortable class fuming about the recalcitrant working class and lack of action by the puppets, and lack of action by the puppets running the establishment's empire. Chaos, just as the serious pole shift precursors are about to ensue. End of the quote from Zeta Talk. I get a lot of email asking who the puppet master is, and would simply point out that for the U.S., the House of Rothschild funds 3/4 of the federal U.S. Reserve, and the other 1/4 funded by the Rockefellers. And the puppets? Certainly Bush and Cheney and the CEOs of large corporations are selected with a lot of input from the puppet master. It's been pointed out that Kerry was hardly different from Bush in this regard. Both were members of Skull and Bones at Yale. Thank you. What would life be like for the wealthy, for the super wealthy, if the paper promise were to collapse, dollars and stocks and bonds be considered worthless? And I quote from ZetaTalk, What They Fear, written September 2004. We've mentioned that the establishment fears losing their perch on the top of the pile and being reduced to the status of the common man. They fear primarily a sudden panic in the masses to the extent that they leave their jobs and the infrastructure collapses as maintenance is not done on power grids or water mains and security over corporate assets is not maintained. Opportunistic looting, which catches like wildfire when it becomes apparent that security is lacking, the police or private security forces distracted by their own panic. Military sent in to quell riots becoming brutal, as they have been frankly trained, creating in the populace a rebellion beyond panic that sets the common man against the establishment, a class war seething under the surface, boiling and not settling. Stock markets collapsing under sudden sell orders in an effort to liquidate cash, and banks unable to meet the demands that bonds and savings accounts being liquidated, so the financial system is no longer considered functional and squatters' rights begin to prevail as the mindset of the masses. Military units or militias becoming breakaway units such that rogue states are formed, the world in the main becoming a no man's land, where the safety of the elite cannot be assumed or assured. The wealthy elite and those in power when the big lies are exposed becoming targets of those who have long resented them, with more than focused looting and retaliation unleashed as starving masses of humanity become organized. The power of the elite no longer recognized when it is reduced to paper ownership, no longer enforced by the courts, and control over police and military forces no longer listening, and consisting of paper money no longer having any value in a barter-driven economy. To counter these possibilities, the establishment has desired a firm date when sudden and unexpected earth changes would occur that might throw the populace into a sudden panic, and the ability to close stock markets and banks in such an event, and to impose martial law to prevent rioting. These steps were viewed as stopping the erosion of power and wealth by substituting a fear of punishment in the minds of the populace for their sense of self-protection and opportunistic greed. Well-timed martial law would supplant what the elite fear with a controlled setting, where travel would be prevented and jobs attended to by force, with workers returned to their jobs by gunpoint if necessary. Thus the power and water utilities would work, and food distribution would continue. Looting would be reduced greatly by curfews and travel restrictions, and the wildfire effect would never ignite. Brutal military techniques would not incite rebellion, as torture would occur behind doors, not in the streets, and the organization needed to incite rebellion unable to occur due to curfew and travel restrictions and selective arrests of likely suspects. Access to stock markets and banking would be controlled so that the system never reaches collapse due to liquidation demands it cannot meet, and the populace fears they must continue to honor their bills and obligations as the monster lives and has not died. Spearheaded from central commands, martial law instituted to encompass all possible militia units would prevent breakaway by exposing such maneuvers. A unit on its own can break away. A unit required to check in and coordinate with others finds this option exposed and thus inhibited. The infrastructure of power and water utilities intact and supporting an intact financial system, the political and thus the legal system is likely to prevail and not collapse, and thus fear of the courts could be used to prevent retaliatory acts against the wealthy elite. The status quo continues. Paper money and deeds and stock ownership of corporations still has the strong arm of the law behind it, and the common man sees the fist above them, uneroded, and continues to walk in the ruts of their workaday world, despite new dangers such as earthquakes and a tottering and wobbling earth. For martial law to succeed at all, there must be a problem extreme enough to be recognized as a rationale for extreme protection, such as the continent rent in two by earthquake, a tidal wave tearing away all the cities along the coastline, or a wave of disease threatening to wipe out the country if not controlled by quarantine. And this threat must be real, else support for the strong arm of martial law would not be in place, and erosion would occur quickly. Thus, martial law imposed just ahead of such disasters would succeed, but attempts to impose it during such disasters would likely fail, as the components of martial law are subject to panic too. And disrupted communications and lack of reassurance on the outcome feed that panic in the very control system that the elite count upon. Once again, the catch-22 for the elite, as without a firm date on changes likely to incite panic, they cannot stop the wildfire they fear, but a firm date will not be forthcoming unless the public is informed about what is coming, and likewise has the date, and thus cooperation with any martial law maneuvers serving the elite over the common man would be reduced. End of the quote from Zeta Talk on what they fear. So, is any of this happening? And a quote from an article from Conspiracy Planet, dated May 30th, 2005. Renowned funds manager predicts global economic collapse. There was an interview on CNBC of the renowned funds manager, Julian Robertson. They used to call him, still do call him, Never Been Wrong Robertson. He's predicted every economic cycle, every debacle, every bull market, and every bear market. Where does it end? And he said, utter global collapse. Not simply economic collapse, complete disintegration of all infrastructure and all public structures of government. Utter, utter collapse. The end is collapse of simple, epic proportion. In 10 years' time, he said, whoever is still alive on the planet will be effectively starting again. And the comments were so negative that the planet is not simply sinking into a sea of red ink, it's already sunk. He said that it will be necessary to control, in 5 years' time, food and water riots, huge detention compounds on federal lands, probably in the West where the land is available, to potentially house 50 million or more citizens that will be in financial ruin. Food production will fail. Total collapse of public infrastructure. Total collapse of medical care systems. All public pension plans. Social Security will collapse. All corporate pension plans will collapse. He was moving into one of the new super secure compounds for wealthy Republicans for when the barbarians will be at the gate. End of the quote. Wow. My comment at the time was that during the Great Depression, the homeless lived on the street or with relatives, and food production did not stop. Is he talking about economics here or a pole shift? Does word of the pending pole shift and its impact on the wealthy get around? I quote from an email I received in the summer of 2005. And I quote, a high-level manager I know has been invited to join a firm-sponsored building project somewhere in the U.S., didn't tell me where, that would get him a bunker of sorts in their survival project, which is said to be quite luxurious. Seems only top managers were invited until the last 6 months. Suddenly, they've become much more inclusive. Apparently, they've revealed to him that they've had inside info on Planet X for several years and have been planning to survive for a year or two now. Poured lots of money into land acquisition and construction. The senior guys there have finally told him he won't have much more time. The end, as they call it, is that near, in their opinion. The inside info source is reputed to be the federal government at some highly placed persons. This info has been disseminated to select parties for several years. It's nothing new to them. They're telling my friend that they believe they're all going to be starting over, and beyond food and shelter, their material possessions won't be worth a damn. No need for Bentleys and Jaguars. No need for much of anything but a way to seal oneself off from the world for a while and make sure they can eat while sealed off. End of the quote from the email. Well, how widespread are these discussions among the wealthy? From another email received in June 2005. And I, your public profile is increasing lately. More radio, more comments quoted, etc. While of course you're aware of the increased interview schedule, are you also aware that Zeta Talk and you are being quoted in water cooler conversations at some large, like, Century City, $500 an hour plus kind of law firms in L.A.? I've some minor connections to a huge law firm that represents presidents and former kings, dictators, entertainment industry players, major celebs, etc. Even in those rather lofty circles, they do seem to have some passing familiarity with Zeta Talk and you. Thought you'd be interested, if not exactly flattered, to know that fact. End of the quote from the email. If financial disaster is right around the corner, what would be the trigger? For the U.S. riding into Iraq to capture the oil fields of the Middle East and floating a huge debt to do so, the road to disaster is obvious. The U.S. debt has been supported largely by China's purchase of our bonds. China has lots of dollars it needs to invest, U.S. dollars it needs to do something with, because the U.S. is buying lots of China goods. China has made sure this trade imbalance stays in place, keeps their price low by tying their currency to the dollar. Thus, as the dollar drops, and it is dropping, their goods do not go up in price. Thus, the U.S. consumer keeps buying China goods, China keeps collecting U.S. dollars, and is forced to invest these dollars in U.S. bonds, returning the dollars to the U.S. China, like any other trading partner, does not want the dollar to bottom out, as their investment would be utterly gone then. But other factors enter in. Oil, for instance. Iran is one of the largest oil producers, in fourth place, and holds the third largest oil reserves. Total oil production, the countries are Saudi Arabia, Russia, United States, Iran, and 14th Iraq. But the greatest oil reserves by country are Saudi Arabia, Canada, 3rd Iran, 4th Iraq. And guess who one of Iran's biggest customers is? You guessed it, China, a neighbor. All the threats lately out of the blue, really, against Iran. Almost like it was time to happen now, the umbrage about Iran's potential nuclear material, which is years away from happening, per the experts. Why now? It's been known for months that Iran was planning to open an oil bourse, a market, and have this based on the euro. Other oil-producing nations have already moved to the euro, Venezuela and Norway, for instance, but this would be a big player. Iran is a big player in the oil production business, based not on the dollar, but on the euro. Well, what does this mean for China? It means they now don't need a large dollar reserve in order to buy oil in dollars, the former standard enforced for decades by the Saudis. So they could dump their dollars. China could dump these dollars. No longer a need to buy U.S. bonds that lose more by the time they are cashed in than they are worth when purchased, even with interest. They can dump these dollars. And this would start a dollar dumping and a precipitous drop in the value of the U.S. dollar. And I quote from the Energy Bulletin, an article dated August 3, 2005. Petrodollar warfare, dollars, euros, and the upcoming Iranian oil bourse. The Bush administration is preparing to undertake a desperate military strategy to thwart Iran's nuclear ambitions, while simultaneously attempting to prevent the Iranian oil bourse from initiating a euro-based system for oil trades. End of the quote. Iran's oil bourse was scheduled to open on March 20, 2006, though this has now been delayed. In anticipation of China no longer investing in U.S. bonds and dumping the dollar, the U.S. has stopped reporting its M3 funds as of March 23, 2006. What's M3? M3 is the report that would show where the money is coming from, the big chunks of money. It would show the money invested in the Fed is no longer coming from China or similar sources, but from the printing presses. And a country printing its own money to stay afloat is a banana republic. This only goes one way, down. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Iran Boondoggle, written March 2006. Right on schedule, leading up to the Iran-announced date for the opening of its petro-euro oil bourse on March 20th, the Bush administration is saber-rattling and making threats, implying military action is not off-limits, and listing Iran as the world's boogeyman. Reminiscent of the build-up to the Iraq War, Iran is listed as assisting terrorism by assisting the resistance in Iraq, perhaps harboring bin Laden and desiring nuclear weapons. Never mind North Korea and all the other countries around the world producing nukes and thumbing their noses at the world while making threats against neighbors. Has the Bush administration gone mad? The U.S. military is exhausted by Iraq, not able to get recruits even at a time of high unemployment in the U.S., unable to call a draft with an increasingly rebellious Congress defying Bush and a public in revolt on all fronts. The national debt is skyrocketing, with countries like China buying our bonds the only way the U.S. is staying afloat other than to print money like a banana republic. The M3 reporting, which shows the source of the funds being pumped into the central banks, due to go secret on March 23rd, shows the relationship of the current press on Iran to financial rather than terrorism or nuclear proliferation reasons. What do they hope to accomplish? Deflecting a precipitous drop in the dollar at the very least. The world has used the dollar in oil trades for decades due to a Saudi promise to hold on to the dollar. What this does for the U.S. is force countries around the world to retain dollars as they need them to buy oil from the primary producers. Iraq slipped to the euro in the years preceding the 2003 invasion, but was quickly returned to the dollar in 2003 by the U.S. administrators, who took over the oil ministry in Iraq. But the steady slide to slip to the euro from the dollar has continued, with Norway, Venezuela, and Syria moving to the euro of late. Even Dubai moved to put a portion of their oil trade in euros, a reaction to the rebuke by America over the ports management debacle. What makes Iran so important, given the trend? Norway could hardly be invaded, as what would be the excuse? Venezuela has been put on the enemy list, but any invasion would be opening a second front, something the military has refused to even consider. But as we mentioned, inciting the Iraqi violence to spill over into Iran is possible, in the Bush mind, as it would be an extension of the Iraqi front. This, in essence, forces the U.S. military into Iran, bypassing debate, or so they hope. Iran is the fourth largest in oil production and holds the third largest oil reserves, so securing this under U.S. occupation has been a goal of the Bush crowd all along. But the timing of the saber-rattling indicates a financial issue as the precipitator. Few in the U.S. watching the financial experts drone on about the Dow as though it were holding steady on its own would suspect the financial manipulations that go on behind the scene. The Plunge Protection Team, authorized into law during the Reagan era, allows the government itself to line up buyers for sellers, insist that sell orders be held until such buyers are arranged, allow military industrial contractors who put their pension funds at risk to assist in this manner to be compensated via their DOD contracts, and if all else fails, simply manipulate the price of stock. Who would investigate this? The SEC? The SEC is a co-conspirator. Then take the good news the media chirps at the public. The economy is strong, unemployment down, and inflation in check. None of this is even remotely true. The opposite true, in fact, with the numbers given to the media cooked. Employment statistics are cooked up from birth-death statistics, of all things, and not even related to actual employment. Then there is the matter of the debt, which requires huge amounts of cash infusions from countries like China buying U.S. bonds to stay afloat. What happens then if the U.S. dollar is no longer desired because it's no longer needed for the oil markets? The dollar gets dumped, and as it drops in value, as it has been dropping in value, it does not make financial sense for a country or individual to hold on to dollars. One day a dollar bill is worth a dollar and the next worth only 75 cents as the trading value of the dollar has dropped. Who in the financial markets wants to lose money? For those in the U.S., this means an increased price for products produced overseas, and this includes oil and gas. For countries like China, which have been buying U.S. bonds only because they have such a glut of dollars from the U.S. trade deficit, the motivation to buy U.S. bonds vaporizes when they no longer have a glut and the dollar begins to drop at an accelerating rate. The U.S., to date, has been buying Chinese products more than China has been buying U.S. products, thus the glut. But if the U.S. citizen, pushed to the brink on credit card debt and now facing a housing bubble burst, can no longer shop, then China loses its glut of dollars and is no longer inclined to be nice to the U.S. Thus, the purchase of U.S. bonds by China stops, and the U.S. debt is no longer funded in a legal manner. Printing dollars has a steady eroding effect, which would within months manifest. Each dollar printed without proper backing dilutes the worth of every other dollar afloat in the markets. So in addition to the rising cost of goods from overseas, due to the drop in U.S. dollar, the U.S. public would be dealing with horrific inflation. Even a compliant media, told to issue government statistics without question or comment, would not go along when the price of bread or gas doubles. Desperate times result, the Great Depression revisited. To prevent this seemingly inevitable future from emerging, the Bush administration hopes to intimidate Iran into giving up its oil boom's plans, thereby retaining the dollar supremacy in the oil markets, and in particular, an oil market that China uses. This ensures China bond buying, which keeps the tenuous U.S. afloat. Given all of this, what is likely to happen? The puppet master, as we have stated, set out to decapitate the Bush crowd, to eliminate them as rogue puppets who were determined to secure the world's oil fields for themselves, for kingship of the world. His weapons have been primarily financial, raising the interest rates, thus creating problems at home for Bush. But leaks to expose Bush and erode public support have also been used. These decapitation thrusts have succeeded, but what is the puppet master's goal? Beyond weakening the Bush administration into virtual ineffectiveness, he wants the U.S. out of Iraq, where it has created a mess. The puppet master is likely to create a financial crisis in the U.S. to force the Congress to withdraw from Iraq. Dumping U.S. dollars does not require an oil boom in Iran, as it could occur at the request of the puppet master instead. The likely outcome is that the U.S. will threaten and bluster, plant evidence against Iran that the U.S. citizen and the world does not believe, rumble tanks and planes up to the border of Iran, and there the conflicts. Support for the U.S. debt will steadily drop, with the U.S. quietly going banana republic at least to some degree. The U.S. public will suffer the consequences, keeping the pressure on to stop the financial hemorrhage in Iraq that the U.S. can no longer afford. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.